Chaladin," he said, standing in the barrack common room, which had been emptied at the High Marshal's order. Noro's squad had remained by Kaladin's request, and Azure had invited in Battalion Lord Hadinar, a stocky, bejoweled fellow, one of Azure's primary officers. The only other person in the room was the fidgety Ardent who painted glyph wards for the platoon. Soft blue sphere light bathed the table where most of them sat. Kaladin stood instead, washing the blood from his hands with a damp rag at a water basin.
"Kaladin," Azure mused. "A regal name? What's your house?"
"They just call me Stormblessed. If you need proof of my orders from the king, it can be arranged."
"Let's pretend, for the sake of conversation, that I believe you," Azure said. "What do you want from us?"
"I need to know how you're using a soul caster without drawing the attention of the Screaming Spren. The secret might be essential to my work to save the city."
Azure nodded, then rose and walked toward the back of the barrack. She used a key to open the back room. Kaladin had glanced in there before, though. It only held some supplies. The rest of them followed Azure into the room, where she slipped a small hook between two stones and threw a hidden latch. This let her remove a stone, revealing a handle. She heaved, pulling open a doorway. The light of a few handheld spheres revealed a small corridor that ran down the middle of the city wall.
"You cut a tunnel in one of the wind blades, sir?" Beard asked, shocked.
"This has been here longer than any of us have been alive, soldier," Battalion Lord Hadinar said. "It is a quick, secret way between posts. There are even a few hidden stairwells up to the top."
They had to go single file inside. Beard followed behind Kaladin, scrunched up against him in the confines.
So Cal, you know the Blackthorn?"
"Better than most."
"And, you know that the two of you never went swimming together in the Pure Lake?" Kaladin said.
"Yes, though I suspect the rest of the squad guessed that, Beard."
"Yeah,"
he said, glancing back at the others. He exhaled softly.
"I figured you'd never believe the truth, since it was actually the Azish Emperor."
This corridor, cut through the stone, reminded Kaladin of the strata of Urethiru. They reached a trap door in the floor, which Azure opened with a key. A short trip down a ladder, which had a dumbwaiter beside it with ropes and pulleys, led them to a large room filled with sacks of grain. Kaladin held up a sphere, revealing a jagged wall with chunks cut out of it in a distinctly uneven way.
"I come down here every night or so," Azure said, pointing with a gloved hand, "and cut out blocks with my blade. I have nightmares about the city collapsing down on us, but I don't know of another way to get enough stone. At least, not without drawing even more attention."
On the other side of the chamber, they found yet another locked door. Azure knocked twice, then opened this one, revealing a smaller room occupied by an aged female Ardent. She knelt beside a stone block and wore a distinctive fabrial on her hand, one that glowed powerfully with light from the emeralds it contained. The woman had an inhuman look to her. She seemed to be growing vines under her skin, and they peeked out around her eyes, growing from the corners and spreading down her face like runners of ivy. She stood and bowed to Azure. A real soul caster. So, Azure wasn't doing it herself?
"How?" Kaladin asked. "Why didn't the screamers come for you?"
Azure pointed at the sides of the room, and for the first time Kaladin noticed the walls were covered with reflective metal plates. He frowned and rested his fingers against one and found it cool to the touch. This wasn't steel, was it?
"Soon after the strangeness at the palace began," Azure said, "a man pulled a chul cart up to the front of our barrack. He had these sheets of metal in the back. He was an odd fellow. I've had interactions with him before."
"Angular features?" Kaladin guessed. "Quick with an insult, silly and straight, somehow all at once?"
"You know him, I see," Azure said. "He warned us to only soul cast inside a room lined with this metal. So far as we can tell, it prevents the screamers from sensing us.
Unfortunately, it also blocks span reeds from contacting the outside. We keep poor Ithi and her sister working non-stop, trading off the Soulcaster. Feeding the entire city would be an impossible task for the two of them, but we've been able to at least keep our army strong, with some despair.
Damnation, Kaladin thought, inspecting the reflective walls. This wasn't going to help him use his powers without notice.
All right, Stormblessed, Azure said. I've opened our secrets to you. Now you'll tell me how the king could expect one man, even a shard-bearer, to be able to save this city.
There's a device in Kolinar, he said, of ancient design. It can instantly transport large groups of people across great distances.
He turned toward Azure and the others.
The Kolin armies wait to join us here. All we need to do is activate the device, something that only a select few people can do.
The soldiers looked stunned, all but Azure, who perked up.
Really? You're serious? Kaladin nodded. Great. Let's get this thing working. Where is it?
Kaladin took a deep breath.
Well, that happens to be the problem.
82. The Girl Who Stood Up. Surely this will bring, at long last, the end to war that the heralds promised us. From Drawer 3020, Final Emerald. She huddled someplace. She'd forgotten where. For a while, she'd been everybody. 100 faces, cycling one after another. She searched them for comfort. Surely she could find someone who didn't hurt. All the nearby refugees had fled, naming her a Spren. They left her with those 100 faces, in silence, until her stormlight died off. That left only Shallan, unfortunately. Darkness, a candle snuffed out, a screen cut off. With nothing to see, her mind provided images. Her father, his face turning purple as she strangled him, singing a lullaby. Her mother, dead, with burned eyes. Tin, run through by pattern. Kabsul, shaking on the floor as he succumbed to poison. Yalb, the incorrigible sailor from Wind's Pleasure, dead in the depths of the sea. An unnamed coachman, murdered by members of the Ghost Bloods. Now Grund, his head opened up. Vale had tried to help these people, but had succeeded only in making their lives worse. The lie that was Vale became suddenly manifest. She hadn't lived on the streets, and she didn't know how to help people. Pretending to have experience didn't mean she actually did. Vale had always thought to herself that Shallan could handle the big picture, the Voidbringers and the Unmade. Now she had to confront the truth that she had no idea what to do. She couldn't get to the Oathgate. It was guarded by an ancient Spren that could get inside her brain. The whole city was depending on her, but she hadn't even been able to save a little beggar boy. As she curled up on the floor, Grund's death seemed a shadow of everything else, of her good intentions turned arrogant. Everywhere she trod, death haunted her. Every face she wore was a lie to pretend she could stop it. Couldn't she be somebody who didn't hurt? Just once? Light pushed shadows before it, long and slender. She blinked, momentarily transfixed. How many days had it been since she'd seen light? A figure stepped into the common room outside her little hole of a chamber. She was still in the long room Muri had lived in. She sniffled softly. The newcomer brought his light to her doorway, then carefully stepped inside and settled down across from her, his back against the wall. The room was narrow enough that his legs stretched out and touched the wall beside her. She had hers drawn up, knees against her chest, head resting on them. Wit didn't speak. He put his sphere on the floor and let her have the silence.
"I should have known better," she finally whispered.
"Perhaps," Wit said. "Giving out so much food only drew predators. Foolish. I should have focused on the Oathgate." Again. Perhaps.
It's so hard, Wit. When I wear Vale's face, I have to think like her. Seeing the larger scope grows difficult when she takes over, and I want her to take over because she's not me.
The thieves who killed that child have been seen to, Wit said. She looked up at him. When some of the men in the market heard what had happened, Wit continued, they finally formed the militia they'd been talking about. They rushed the grips, forcing them to give up the murderer, then disperse. I apologize for not acting sooner. I had been distracted by other tasks. You'll be pleased to know that some of the food you gave away was still in their base.
Was it worth that boy's life? Shallan whispered.
I cannot judge the worth of a life. I would not dare to attempt it.
Muri said it would be better if I were dead.
As I lack the experience to decide the worth of a life, I sincerely doubt that she has somehow obtained it. You tried to help the people of the market. You mostly failed. This is life. The longer you live, the more you fail. Failure is the mark of a life well lived. In turn, the only way to live without failure is to be of no use to anyone. Trust me, I've practiced.
She sniffled, looking away. I have to become Vale to escape the memories, but I don't have the experience that she pretends to have. I haven't lived her life.
No, Wit said softly. You've lived a harsher one, haven't you?
Yet still, somehow, a naive one.
She drew in a deep, ragged breath. She had to stop this. She knew she had to get over the tantrum and go back to the tailor's shop. She'd do it. She'd shove all this into the back of her mind with everything else she ignored. They could all fester together.
Wit settled back.
Have you heard the story of the girl who looked up?
Shallan didn't reply.
It's a story from long ago, Wit said. He cupped his hands around the sphere on the floor. Things were different in that time. A wall kept out the storms, but everyone ignored it. All but one girl, who looked up one day and contemplated it.
Why is there a wall?
Shallan whispered. Oh, so you do know it. Good. He leaned down, blowing at the creme dust on the floor. It swirled up, making a figure of a girl. It gave the brief impression of her standing before a wall, but then disintegrated back into dust. He tried again, and it swirled a little higher this time, but still fell back to dust.
A little help? He asked.
He pushed a bag of spheres across the ground toward Shallan. Shallan sighed, then picked up the bag and drew in the stormlight. It started to rage within her, demanding to be used, so she stood up and breathed out, weaving it into an illusion she'd done once before. A pristine village, and a young girl standing and looking upward toward an impossibly tall wall in the distance. The illusion made the room seem to vanish. Somehow Shallan painted the walls and ceiling in precisely the right way, making them disappear into the landscape, become part of it. She hadn't made them invisible. They were merely covered up in a way that made it seem Shallan and Wit were standing in another place. This was more than she'd ever done before. But was she really doing it? Shallan shook her head and stepped up beside the girl, who wore long scarves. Wit stepped up on the other side. He said. Not bad, but it's not dark enough.
What?
I thought you knew the story, Wit said, tapping the air. The color and light bled from her illusion, leaving them standing in the darkness of night, lit only by a frail set of stars. The wall was an enormous blot before them. In these days, there was no light.
No light?
Of course, even without light, people still had to live, didn't they? That's what people do. I hasten to guess it's the first thing they learn how to do. So they lived in the darkness, farmed in the darkness, ate in the darkness. He waved behind him. People stumbled about in the village, feeling their way to different activities, barely able to see by the starlight. In this context, strange though it seemed, some pieces of the story as she'd told it made sense. When the girl went up to people and asked, "Why is there a wall?" it was obvious why they found it so easy to ignore. The illusion followed Wit's words as the girl in the scarves asked several people about the wall. "Don't go beyond it, or you shall die." "And so," Wit said, "she decided that the only way she'd find answers would be to climb the wall herself." He glanced at Shallan. "Was she stupid or bold?"
"How should I know?"
"Wrong answer. She was both."
"It wasn't stupid. If nobody asked questions, then we would never learn anything."
"What of the wisdom of her elders?"
"They offered no explanation for why she shouldn't ask about the wall. No rationalization, no justification. There's a difference between listening to your elders and just being as frightened as everyone else."
Wit smiled, the sphere in his hand lighting his face. "Funny, isn't it? How so many of our stories start the same way, but have opposing endings? In half, the child ignores her parents, wanders out into the woods, and gets eaten. In the other half, she discovers great wonders. There aren't many stories about the kids who say, 'Yes, I shall not go into the forest. I'm glad my parents explained that is where the monsters lived.'"
"Is that what you're trying to teach me, then?" Shallan snapped. "The fine distinction between choosing for yourself and ignoring good advice? I'm a terrible teacher."
He waved his hand as the girl reached the wall after a long hike. She started to climb. "Fortunately, I am an artist, and not a teacher."
"People learn things from art."
"Blasphemy! Art is not art if it has a function." Shallan rolled her eyes. "Take this fork," Wit said. He waved his hand. Some of her stormlight split off from her, spinning above his hand and making an image of a floating fork in the darkness.
"It has a use. Eating. Now, if it were to be ornamented by a master artisan, would that change its function?"
The fork grew intricate embossing in the form of growing leaves.
"No, of course not. It has the same use, ornamented or not. The art is the part that serves no purpose."
"It makes me happy, Wit. That's a purpose." He grinned, and the fork disappeared.
"Weren't we in the middle of a story about a girl climbing a wall?" Shallan asked.
"Yes, but that part takes forever," he said. "I'm finding things to occupy us. We could just skip the boring part."
"Skip?" Wit said, aghast. "Skip part of a story?"
Shallan snapped her fingers, and the illusion shifted so that they stood atop the wall in the darkness. The girl in the scarves finally, after toiling many days, pulled herself up beside them.
"You wound me," Wit said. "What happens next?"
"The girl finds steps," Shallan said. "And the girl realizes that the wall wasn't to keep something in, but to keep her and her people out."
"Because?"
"Because we're monsters." Wit stepped over to Shallan, then quietly folded his arms around her. She trembled, then twisted, burying her face in his shirt.
"You're not a monster, Shallan," Wit whispered. "Oh, child, the world is monstrous at times, and there are those who would have you believe that you are terrible by association."
"I am."
"No, for you see, it flows the other direction. You are not worse for your association with the world, but it is better for its association with you."
She pressed against him, shivering.
"What do I do, Wit?" she whispered. I know I shouldn't be in so much pain.
She took a deep breath.
"I had to kill them. I had to. But now I've said the words and I can't ignore it anymore. So I should just die, too, for having done it."
Wit waved to the side, toward where the girl in the scarves still overlooked a new world. What was that long pack she had set down beside her?
"So you remember?"
Wit said gently.
"The rest of the story?"
"It's not important. We found the moral already. The wall kept people out."
"Why?"
"Because..." What had she told Pattern before, when she'd been showing him this story?
"Because,"
Wit said, pointing,
"beyond the wall was God's light."
It burst alight in a sudden explosion, a brilliant and powerful brightness that lit the landscape beyond the wall. Shallan gasped as it shone over them. The girl in the scarves gasped in turn and saw the world in all its colors for the first time. "She climbed down the steps," Shallan whispered, watching the girl run down the steps, scarves streaming behind her. "She hid among the creatures who lived on this side. She sneaked up to the light, and she brought it back with her, to the other side, to the land of shadows."
"Yes, indeed,"
Wit said, as the scene played out, the girl in the scarves slipping up to the grand source of light, then breaking off a little piece in her hand. An incredible chase, the girl climbing the steps frantically, a crazed descent, and then light, for the first time in the village, followed by the coming of the storms, boiling over the wall.
"The people suffered," Wit said,
"but each storm brought light renewed, for it could never be put back, now that it had been taken. And people, for all their hardship, would never choose to go back, not now that they could see." The illusion faded, leaving the two of them standing in the common room of the building, Muri's little chamber off to the side. Shallan pulled back, ashamed at having wept on his shirt.
"Do you wish,"
Wit asked,
"that you could go back to not being able to see?"
"No," she whispered.
"Then live, and let your failures be part of you."
That sounds an awful lot like a moral, Wit. Like you're trying to do something useful.
"Well, as I said,
we all fail now and then." He swept his hands to the sides, as if brushing something away from Shallan. Stormlight curled out from her right and left, swirling, then forming into two identical versions of Shallan. They stood with ruddy hair, mottled faces, and sweeping white coats that belonged to someone else. "Wit," she started.
"Hush."
He walked up to one of the illusions, inspecting it, tapping his chin with his index finger.
"A lot has happened to this poor girl, hasn't it?"
"Many people have suffered more and they get along fine."
"Fine?"
Shallan shrugged, unable to banish the truths she'd spoken. The distant memory of singing to her father as she strangled him, the people she'd failed, the problems she'd caused. The illusion of Shallan to the left gasped, then backed up against the wall of the room, shaking her head. She collapsed, head down against her legs, curling up.
"Poor fool,"
Shallan whispered. "Everything she tries only makes the world worse. She was broken by her father, then broke herself in turn. She's worthless, Wit." She gritted her teeth, found herself sneering.
"It's not really her fault, but she's still worthless."
Wit grunted, then pointed at the second illusion, standing behind them.
"And that one?"
"No different," Shallan said, tiring of this game. She gave the second illusion the same memories. Father, Helleran, failing Jasnah, everything. The illusory Shallan stiffened, then set her jaw and stood there.
"Yes, I see," Wit said, strolling up to her. "No different."
"What are you doing to my illusions?" Shallan snapped.
"Nothing. They're the same in every detail."
"Of course they're not," Shallan said, tapping the illusion, feeling it. A sense pulsed through her from it, memories and pain, and something smothering them. Forgiveness. For herself. She gasped, pulling her finger back as if it had been bitten. It's terrible, Whit said, stepping up beside her. To have been hurt. It's unfair and awful and horrid. But Shallan, it's okay to live on. She shook her head. Your other minds take over, he whispered, because they look so much more appealing. You'll never control them until you're confident in returning to the one who birthed them, until you accept being you. Then I'll never control it. She blinked tears. No, Whit said. He nodded toward the version of her still standing up. You will, Shallan. If you do not trust yourself, can you trust me? For in you I see a woman more wonderful than any of the lies. I promise you that woman is worth protecting. You are worth protecting. She nodded toward the illusion of herself still standing. I can't be her. She's just another fabrication. Both illusions vanished. I see only one woman here, Whit said, and it's the one who is standing up. Shallan, that has always been you. You just have to admit it. Allow it. He whispered to her. It's all right to hurt. He picked up his pack, then unfolded something from inside it. Vale's hat. He pressed the hat into her palm. Shockingly, morning light was shining in the doorway. Had she been here all night, huddled in this hole of a room? Whit? She asked. I can't do it. He smiled. There are certain things I know, Shallan. This is one of them. You can. Find the balance. Accept the pain, but don't accept that you deserved it. Pattern hummed in appreciation of that, but it wasn't as easy as Whit said. She took in a breath and felt a shiver run through her. Whit collected his things, pack over his shoulder. He smiled, then stepped out into the light. Shallan released her breath, feeling foolish. She followed Whit out into the light, emerging into the market, which hadn't quite woken up yet. She didn't see Whit outside, but that was no surprise. He had a way of being where he shouldn't, but not being where you'd expect. Carrying Vale's hat, she walked the street, feeling odd to be herself in trousers and coat. Red hair, but a safe-hand glove. Should she hide? Why? This felt fine. She walked all the way back to the tailor's shop and peeked in. Adolin sat at a table inside, bleary-eyed. He stood upright. Shallan? We were worried. Vatha said you should have come back. He embraced her and she relaxed into him. She felt better. Not well yet. It was all still there. But something about Wit's words, I see only one woman here, the one who is standing up. Adolin still held her for a time, as if he needed to reassure himself. I know you're fine, of course, he said. I mean, you're basically unkillable, right? Finally, he pulled back, still holding her shoulders, and looked down at her outfit. Should she explain? Nice, Adolin said. Shallan, that's sharp. The red on white? He stepped back, nodding. Did Yokska make that for you? Let me see the hat on you. Oh, Adolin, she thought, pulling on the hat. The jacket is a hair too loose, Adolin said, but the style is a really good match. Bold, crisp. He cocked his head. Would look better with the sword at your waist. Maybe... He trailed off. Do you hear that? She turned, frowning. It sounded like marching. A parade? This early? They looked out at the street and found Kaladin approaching along with what seemed to be an army of 500 or 600 men. wearing the uniforms of the wall guard. Adolin sighed softly. Of course. He's probably their leader now or something. Storming bridge boy. Kaladin marched his men right up to the front of the tailor's shop. She and Adolin stepped out to meet him, and she heard Elokar scrambling down the steps inside, shouting at what he'd apparently seen out the window. Kaladin was speaking softly with a woman in armor, helm under her arm, face crossed by a pair of scars. High Marshal Azure was younger than Shallan had expected. The soldiers grew hushed as they saw Adolin, then the king, who was already dressed. "So that's what you meant," Azure said to Kaladin. "Stormblessed?" Elokar asked. "What is this?" "You've been wanting an army to attack the palace, Your Majesty," Kaladin said. "Well, we're ready."
83. Crimson to Break. As the duly appointed keepers of the perfect gems, we of the Elsecallers have taken the burden of protecting the ruby nicknamed Honor's Drop. Let it be recorded. From Drawer 2010, Zircon. Adolin Colin washed his face with a splash of cold water, then rubbed it clean with a wash rag. He was tired. He'd spent much of the night fretting about Shallan's failure to return. Below, in the shop proper, he could hear the others stomping about as they made last-minute preparations for the assault. An assault on the palace, his home for many years. He took a deep breath. Something was wrong. He fidgeted, checking his belt knife, the emergency bandages in his pocket. He checked the glyph ward Shallan had made him at his request, determination, wrapped around his forearm. Then he finally realized what was bothering him. He summoned his shard blade. It was thick at the base, as wide as a man's palm, and the front waved like the ripples of a moving eel. The back had small crystalline protrusions growing out of it. No sheath could hold a weapon like this, and no mortal sword could imitate it, not without growing unusably heavy. You knew a shard blade when you saw one. That was the point. Adolin held the weapon before him in the lavatory, looking at his reflection in the metal. "I don't have my mother's necklace," he said, "or any of the other traditions I used to follow. I never really needed those. I've only ever needed you." He took a deep breath. I guess you used to be alive. The others say they can hear your screaming if they touch you. That you're dead, yet somehow still in pain. I'm sorry. I can't do anything about that, but thank you. Thank you for assisting me all these years. And if it helps, I'm going to use you to do something good today. I'll try to always use you that way. He felt better as he dismissed the blade. Of course, he carried another weapon, his belt knife, long and thin. A weapon intended for stabbing armored men. It had felt so satisfying to shove it through Sadeus's eye. He still didn't know whether to feel ashamed or proud. He sighed, checked himself in the mirror, then made another quick decision. When he walked down the steps to the main room a short time later, he was wearing his Colin uniform. His skin missed the softer silk and better form of the tailored outfit, but he found he walked taller in this one, despite the fact that a part of him, deep down, worried he didn't deserve to bear his father's glyphs any longer. He nodded to Elokar, who was speaking with the strange woman known as High Marshal Azure. "My scouts have been driven back," she said, "but they saw enough, Your Majesty. The Voidbringer army is here in its strength. They'll attack today or tomorrow for certain." "Well," Elokar said, "I suppose I understand why you did what you had to in taking control of the guard. I can't very well have you hanged as a usurper. Good work, High Marshal."
"I appreciate that."
Shallan, Kaladin, Scar, and Drahi were standing with a palace map. They needed to memorize the layout. Adolin and Elokar, of course, already knew it. Shallan had chosen not to change out of the fetching white outfit she'd been wearing earlier. It would be more functional for an assault than a skirt. Storms, there was something about a woman in trousers and a coat. Elokar left Azure to take reports from some of her men. Nearby in the room, a few light-eyed men saluted him, the High Lords he and Adolin had revealed themselves to the night before. All they'd needed to do was walk away from the spheres powering their illusions, and their true faces had become manifest. Some of these men were opportunists, but many were loyalists. They'd brought some 100 men-at-arms with them, not as many as Kaladin had brought from the Wall Guard, but still Elokar seemed proud of what he had done in gathering them. As well he should. Together, he and Adolin joined the Radiance near the front of the shop. Elokar waved for the High Lords to join them, then spoke firmly.
"Is everyone clear?" Elokar asked.
"Storm the palace," Kaladin said. "Seize the Sunwalk, cross to the Oathgate platform, hold it while Shallan tries to drive away the Unmaid like she did in Yubithiru. Then we activate the Oathgate and bring troops to Kolinar."
"The control building is completely overgrown with that black heart, Your Majesty," Shallan said. "I don't truly know how I drove away the Midnight Mother, and I certainly don't know that I'll be able to do the same here."
"But you're willing to try?" the king asked.
"Yes." She took a deep breath. Adolin squeezed her on the shoulder reassuringly.
"Windrunner," the king said, "the duty I give you and your men is to get Queen Aesudan and the heir to safety. If the Oathgate works, we take them that way. If not, you must fly them out of the city."
Adolin glanced at the High Lords, who seemed to be taking all of this, the arrival of Knights Radiant, the king's decision to storm his own palace, in stride. He knew little of how they felt. Voidbringers, Everstorm, corrupted Spren in the city. Eventually you stopped being shocked at what happened to you.
"Are we sure this path across the Sunwalk is the best way?" Kaladin asked, pointing at the map Drahi was holding.
He moved his finger from the palace's eastern gallery along the Sunwalk onto the Oathgate platform. Adolin nodded.
"It's the best way to the Oathgate. Those narrow steps up the outside of that plateau would be murder to storm. Our best chance is to go up the palace's front steps, bring down the doors with our shard blades, and fight through the entryway to the eastern gallery. From there you can go up to the right to reach the king's quarters, or go straight across the Sunwalk."
"I don't relish fighting along this corridor," Kaladin said. "We have to assume that the Fused will join the battle on the side of the palace guard." "It's possible I can distract them if they do come," Shallan said.
Kaladin grunted and didn't complain further. He saw, as Adolin did, this wasn't going to be an easy fight. There were a lot of choke points the defenders could use. But what else could they do? In the distance, drums began sounding. From the walls. Kaladin looked toward them.
"Another raid?" one of the High Lords asked.
"Worse," Kaladin said, as behind them Azure cursed softly. "That's the signal that the city's under attack."
Azure pushed out the front doors of the tailor's shop, and the rest of them followed. Most of the 600 men here belonged to the Wall Guard, and some stepped toward the distant walls, gripping spears and shields.
"Steady, men," Azure called. "Your Majesty, the bulk of my soldiers are dying on the wall in a hopeless fight. I'm here because Stormblessed convinced me that the only way to help them is to take that palace. So if we're going to do it, the time is now."
"We march, then," Elokar said. "High Marshal, Bright Lords, pass the word to your forces. Organize ranks. We march on the palace at my command."
Adolin turned as some Fused coursed through the sky along the distant wall. Enemy surge binders. Storms. He shook his head and hurried over to Yokska and her husband. They had watched all this, the arrival of an army on their doorstep, the preparations for an assault, with bewilderment.
"If the city holds," Adolin said, "you'll be fine. But if it falls..."
He took a deep breath.
"Reports from other cities indicate that there won't be wholesale slaughter. The Voidbringers are here to occupy, not exterminate. I'd still suggest you prepare to flee the city and make your way to the Shattered Plains."
"The Shattered Plains?" Yokska asked, aghast. "But Brightlord, that's hundreds and hundreds of miles."
"I know," he said, wincing. "Thank you so much for taking us in. We're going to do what we can to stop this."
Nearby, Elokar approached the timid Ardent who had come with Azure. He had been hurriedly painting glyph wards for the soldiers and jumped as Elokar took him by the shoulder and shoved an object into his hand.
"What's this?" the Ardent asked, nervous. "It's a span raid," Elokar said. "A half hour after my army marches, you are to contact Urethiru and warn them to get their forces ready to transfer here via the Oathgate."
"I can't use a Fabriel. The Screamers—"
"Steady, man. The enemy may be too preoccupied by their attack to notice you. But even if they do, you must take the risk. Our armies must be ready. The fate of the city could depend on this."
The Ardent nodded, pale. Adolin joined the troops, calming his nerves by force. Just another battle. He'd been in dozens, if not hundreds, of those. But storms, he was used to empty fields of stone, not streets. Nearby, a small group of guardsmen chatted softly.
"We'll be fine," one of them was saying.
He was a shorter man, clean-shaven, though he had strikingly hairy arms.
"I tell you, I saw my own death up there on the wall. She streaked toward me, lance held right toward my heart. I looked in those red eyes and I saw myself dying. Then, he was there. He shot from the tower window like an arrow and crashed into the Voidbringer. That spear was meant for my life, and he changed fate, I tell you. I swear he was glowing when he did it."
"We're entering an era of gods," Adolin thought. Elokar raised his shard blade high and gave the command. They marched through the city, passing worried refugees. Rows of buildings with doors shut tight, as if in preparation for a storm. Eventually, the palace rose before the army like an obsidian block. The very stones seemed to have changed color. Adolin summoned his shard blade, and the sight of it seemed to give comfort to the men nearby. Their march took them toward the northern section of the city, near the city wall. Here the fused were visible, attacking the troops. A strange thumping started, and Adolin took it as another set of drums until a head crested the top of the wall nearest them. Storms! It had an enormous stone wedge of a face that reminded him of that of some great shell beast, though its eyes were just red spots glowing from deep within. The monster pulled itself up by one arm. It didn't seem quite as tall as the city walls, but it was still enormous. Fused buzzed about as it swatted along the wall, spraying defenders like kremlings, then smashed a guard tower. Adolin realized that he, along with much of their force, had stopped to stare at the daunting sight. The ground trembled as stones tumbled down a few blocks away, smashing into buildings.
"Keep moving," Azure called. "Storms, they're trying to get in and beat us to the palace."
The monster ripped apart the guard tower, then with a casual flip, tossed a boulder the size of a horse toward them. Adolin gaped, feeling powerless as the rock inexorably hurtled toward him and the troops. Kaladin rose into the air on a streak of light. He hit the stone and rolled with it, twisting and tumbling in the air. His glow diminished severely. The boulder lurched. It somehow changed momentum, tossed away from Kaladin like a pebble flicked off the table. It crested the city wall, narrowly missing the monster that had thrown it. Adolin faintly heard Spren begin to scream, but that was drowned out by the sounds of rock falling and people on the streets shouting. Kaladin renewed himself with Stormlight from his pack. He was carrying most of the gemstones they'd brought from Urethiru, a wealth from the Emerald Reserve to use in their mission and in opening the Oathgate. Drahi rose into the air beside him, then Scar, who had lashed Shallan upward as well. Adolin knew she was basically immortal, but it was still strange to see her here, on the front lines.
"We'll distract the fused,"
Kaladin shouted to Adolin, pointing at a group of figures flying through the air in their direction.
"And, if we can, we'll seize the Sunwalk. Get in through the palace and meet with us in the Eastern Gallery."
They zipped off. In the near distance, the monster started pounding on the gates there, cracking and splintering the wood.
"Forward!"
Azure yelled. Adolin charged, running up beside Elokar and Azure. They reached the palace grounds and surged up the steps. At the top, soldiers in very similar uniforms, black and a darker blue but still Colin, withdrew, shutting the palace's front doors.
"Kingsguard!"
Adolin shouted, pointing at a group of men in red who had been designated as Elokar's honor guard.
"Be sure to watch the king's flanks as he cuts. Don't let the enemy strike at him as the door falls."
Men crowded up the steps, taking positions along the front of the palace's front porch. They held spears, though some were light-eyed. Adolin, Azure, and Elokar each went to a separate door atop the steps. Here, the front of the palace roof, held up by thick columns, shielded them from the stones that the creature was flinging. Teeth gritted, Adolin rammed his blade into the crack between the thick wooden palace door and the wall. He swiped upward quickly, cutting through both hinges and the bar that had been thrown on the inside. After another slice down the other side freed the door, he stepped back into position. It fell inward with a crash. Immediately the enemy soldiers inside rammed spears outward, hoping to catch Adolin. He danced back and didn't dare swing. Wielding a shard blade with one hand was a challenge, even when you didn't have to worry about hitting your own men. He skipped to the side and let the wall guard attack the doorway. Adolin instead moved over beside a group of soldiers who had come with High Lord Yuramil. Here, Adolin cut through a section of the wall, making an improvised doorway that the soldiers shoved open. He moved down the long porch, opening another, then a third. That done, he peeked in on Elokar, who had stepped through his felled door and was now inside the palace. He swept about himself with his blade in a one-handed grip, shield held in the other. He opened a pocket in the enemy soldiers, having killed dozens already.
"Careful, Elokar," Adolin thought. "Remember, you don't have plate."
Adolin pointed at a platoon of soldiers.
"Reinforce the King's Guard and make sure he doesn't get overwhelmed. If he does, shout for me."
They saluted, and Adolin stepped back. Azure had cut down her door, but her shard blade wasn't as long as the other two. She was leading a more conservative attack, cutting the ends off spears as they rammed out toward her men. As he watched, she stabbed an enemy soldier who tried to push through. Remarkably, his eyes didn't burn, though his skin did go a strange ashen gray as he died.
"Blood of my fathers," Adolin thought. "What's wrong with her blade?"
Even with all the open doorways, getting into the palace was slow going. The men inside had formed shield wall rings around the doorways, and the fighting mostly happened with men using short spears to stab at each other. Some platoons of wall guard brought in longer pikes to break the ranks of defenders, preparing for a surge.
"You men ever flank-shielded a shard-bearer?"
Adolin said to the nearest squad of soldiers.
"No, sir," said one of the men, "but we've done the training." "It'll have to do," Adolin said, taking his blade in two hands. "I'm going in that center hole. Stay close and keep the spears off my sides. I'll be careful not to catch you in my sweeps." "Yes, sir," their squad leader said.
Adolin took a deep breath, then approached the opening. The interior bristled with spears, like the proverbial white spine's den. At Adolin's instruction, a soldier on his side faced his men and did a countdown with one hand. As the last finger dropped, the soldiers at the doorway fell back. Adolin charged through into the palace entry hall, with its marble floors and high vaulted ceilings. The enemy thrust a dozen spears at him. He ducked low, taking a slice on the shoulder as he did a two-handed sweep, cutting a group of soldiers at the knees. The enemy dropped, their legs ruined by the shard blade. Four men followed him in and raised shields at his sides. Adolin attacked forward, hacking the fronts off spears, cutting at hands.
Storms, the men he fought were too silent.
They'd cry in pain if stabbed or grunt with exertion, but otherwise seemed muted, as if the darkness smothered their emotions. Adolin took his blade in an overhead grip and fell into stone stance, swiping down with precise cuts, felling man after man in a careful, controlled set of strikes. His soldiers protected his flanks while the wide reach of the blade protected his front. Eyes burned. The shield line wavered.
"Fall back 3 steps!"
Adolin shouted to his men, then transitioned to wind stance and swept outward with wide, flowing sweeps. In the passion and beauty of dueling, he sometimes forgot how terrible a weapon shard blades were. Here, as he rampaged among the faltering line, it was all too obvious. He killed 8 men in a moment and completely destroyed the defensive line.
"Go!"
he shouted, pointing with his blade. Men surged through the doorway and seized the ground just inside the entry hall. Nearby, Elokar stood tall, his narrow shard blade glittering as he called commands. Soldiers fell, dying and cursing, the true sounds of battle, the price of conflict. The enemy finally broke, falling back through the entry hall, which was too large to hold, toward the narrower hallway leading to the eastern gallery.
"Pull out the wounded," Azure called, stepping in. "Seventh Company, hold that far side of the room, make sure they don't try to rush back in. Third Company, sweep the wings and make sure there aren't any surprises."
Curiously, Azure had removed her cloak and wrapped it half around her left arm. Adolin had never seen anything like it. Perhaps she was accustomed to fighting in plate. Adolin got some water, then let a surgeon bandage the shallow cut he'd taken. Though the depths of the palace felt like caverns, this entryway was glorious. Walls of marble, polished and reflective, grand staircases and a bright red rug down the center. He'd burned that as a child once, playing with a candle. Cut bandaged, he joined Azure, Elokar, and several of the High Lords who were studying the wide corridor that led to the Eastern Gallery. The enemy had formed an excellent shield wall here. They'd settled in, and men in the second rank had crossbows ready and waiting.
"That's going to be crimson to break," Azure said. "We'll fight for every inch."
Outside, the crashing at the gate finally grew silent. "They're in," Adolin guessed. "That breach isn't far from here." High Lord Shade grunted. "Maybe our enemies will turn against one another? Can we hope the Voidbringers and the Palace Guard will start fighting each other?"
"No," Elokar said. "The forces that have darkened the palace belong to the enemy who now fights quickly to reach us. They know the danger the Oathgate presents."
"Agreed," Adolin said. "This palace will soon be swarming with Parshman troops."
"Gather your men," Elokar said to the group. "Azure has command of the assault. High Marshal, you must clear this hallway."
One of the High Lords looked at the woman and cleared his throat, but then decided not to say anything. Grim, Azure commanded archers to use short bows to try to soften the enemy. But that shield wall was built to hold out against arrows, so Azure gave the order and her men advanced against the fortified enemy. Adolin looked away as the corridor became a meat grinder, crossbow bolts smacking against men in waves. The wall guard had shields too, but they had to risk advancing, and a crossbow could punch. Adolin had never been good at this part of battlefield fighting. Stormont, he wanted to be at the front, leading the charge. The rational part of him knew that would be stupid. You didn't risk your shardbearers in such a charge, not unless they had plate.
"Your Majesty," an officer called to Elokar, crossing the entryway, "we found an oddity."
Elokar nodded for Adolin to take care of it, and, glad for the distraction, he jogged over to meet up with the man.
"What?" "Closed door to the palace garrison," the man said. "Rigged to lock from the outside."
Curious. Adolin hiked after the man, passing an improvised triage station, where a couple of surgeons knelt among pain sprints, seeing to men who had been wounded in the initial assault. They'd be far busier once the push down the hallway was finished. To the west of the entryway was the palace garrison, a large housing for soldiers. A group of Azure's men were studying the door, which had indeed been rigged to lock shut from the outside with a metal bar. Judging from the splintered wood, whatever was inside had tried to get out.
"Open it,"
Adolin said, summoning his shard blade. The soldiers cautiously lifted aside the bar, then eased open the door, one holding out some spheres for light. They didn't find monsters, but a group of dirty men in palace guard uniforms. They had gathered at the noise outside, and at seeing Adolin, a few of them fell to their knees, letting out relieved praises to the Almighty.
"Your Highness?"
said a younger Alethi man with captain's knots on his shoulder.
"Oh, Prince Adolin, it is you! Or is this somehow a cruel deception?"
"It's me," Adolin said. "Sidon? Storms, man, I barely recognize you through that beard. What happened?"
"Sir, something's wrong with the Queen. First she killed that Ardent, and then executed Bright Lord Cavies."
He took a deep breath.
"We're traitors, sir."
"She called the guard, sir," another man said. "Locked us in here because we wouldn't obey. Practically forgot about us."
Adolin breathed out a relieved sigh. The fact that the entire guard hadn't simply gone along with her, well, it lifted a burden from his shoulders, one he hadn't realized he'd been carrying.
"We're taking back the palace," Adolin said. "Gather your men, Sidon, and meet up with the surgeons in the main entryway. They'll look you over, get you some water, take your reports."
"Sir," Sidon said. "If you're storming the palace, we want to join you."
Many of the others nodded.
"Join us? You've been locked in here for weeks, men. I don't expect that you're fit for combat."
"Weeks?"
Sidon said.
"Surely it's only been a few days, Bright Lord."
He scratched at a beard that seemed to argue with that sentiment.
"We've only eaten, what, 3 times since being thrown in here?"
Several of the others nodded.
"Take them to the surgeons," Adolin said to the scouts who had fetched him. "But get spears for the ones who claim to be strong enough to hold them. Sidon, your men will be reserves. Don't push yourselves too hard."
Back in the main entryway, Adolin passed a surgeon working on a man in a palace guard uniform. To the surgeons, it didn't matter if you were an enemy. They were helping any who needed their attention. That was fine, but this man stared up with glazed eyes and didn't cry or groan like a wounded man should. He only whispered to himself.
I know him, too, Adolin realized, searching for the name. Dodd? That's it. That's what we called him, anyway.
He reported to the king what he'd found. Ahead, Azure's men were making a final push to claim the hallway. They'd left dozens dying, staining the carpet a darker shade of red. Adolin had the distinct sense that he could hear something. Over the din of the fighting, over the shouts of men echoing against the walls. A quiet voice that somehow cut to his soul.
Passion. Sweet passion.
The palace guard finally relinquished the hallway, retreating through two sets of broad double doors at the other end. Those would lead to the eastern gallery. The doors weren't very defensible, but the enemy was obviously trying to buy as much time as possible. Some soldiers cleared bodies out of the way, preparing the way for Adolin and Elikar to cut down the doors. The wood, however, started shaking before they could strike. Adolin backed up, presenting his blade in wind stance by habit, ready to strike at what came through. The door opened, revealing a glowing figure.
Stormfather, Adolin whispered.
Kaladin shone with a powerful brilliance, his eyes beacons of blue, streaming with stormlight. He gripped a glowing metallic spear that was easily 12 feet long. Behind him, Skarr and Drahi also glowed brilliantly, looking little like the affable bridgeman who had protected Adolin on the shattered plains.
The gallery is secure, Kaladin said, stormlight puffing from his lips. The enemy you pushed back has fled up the steps. Your Majesty, I suggest you send Azure's men onto the sunwalk to hold it.
Adolin ducked into the eastern gallery, followed by a flood of soldiers, Azure calling commands. Straight ahead was the entrance to the sunwalk, an open-sided walkway. On it, Adolin was surprised to see not only guard corpses, but three prominent bodies in blue. Kaladin, Skarr, Drahi.
Illusions?
Works better than fighting them off, Shallan said, stepping up to his side. The flying ones are distracted by the fighting at the city wall, so they left the moment they thought the bridgeman had fallen.
We pushed another force of palace guards back into the monastery first, Kaladin said, pointing. We're going to need an army to scrape them out.
Azure looked to Elikar, who nodded, so she started giving the commands. Shallan clicked her tongue, prodding at Adolin's bandaged shoulder, but he assured her it was nothing serious. The king strode through the gallery, then looked up the broad stairs.
Your Majesty, Kaladin called. I'm going to lead a force up to the royal chambers, Elikar said. Someone needs to find out what happened to Aes Sedain, what happened to this whole storming city.
The glow faded from Kaladin's eyes, his stormlight running low. His clothing seemed to droop, his feet settling more solidly on the ground. He suddenly seemed a man again, and Adolin found that more relaxing.
I'll go with him,
Kaladin said softly to Adolin, handing him the pack of emeralds, after picking out two brilliant ones for himself.
Take Skarr and Drahi and get Shallan to the Unmade.
Sounds good, Adolin said.
He picked out some soldiers to go with the king. A platoon from the wall guard, a handful of the armsmen the Highlords had brought. And, after some thought, he added Sidon and half a platoon of the men who had been imprisoned in the palace.
Those troops refused the queen's orders, Adolin said to Elikar, nodding to Sidon. They seem to have resisted the influence of whatever's going on in here, and they'll know the palace better than the wall guard.
Excellent, Elikar said, then started up the steps. Don't wait for us. If Brightness Devar is successful, go right to Yuvithiru and bring our armies back.
Adolin nodded, then gave Kaladin a quick salute, tapping his wrists together with hands and fists. The Bridge Four salute.
Good luck, Bridge Boy.
Kaladin smiled, his silvery spear vanishing as he gave the salute back, then hustled after the king. Adolin jogged over to Shallan, who was staring along the sunwalk. Azure had claimed it with her soldiers, but hadn't advanced onto the Oathgate platform beyond. Adolin rested his hand on Shallan's shoulder.
They're there, she whispered. Two of them this time. Last night, Adolin, I had to run. The revel was getting inside my head.
I've heard it, he said, resummoning his blade. We'll face it together, like last time.
Shallan took a deep breath, then summoned Pattern as a shard blade. She held the blade before herself in a common stance.
Good form, Adolin said.
I had a good teacher.
They advanced across the sunwalk, passing fallen enemy soldiers and a single dead fused pinned to a cleft in the rock by what appeared to be his own lance. Shallan lingered at the corpse, but Adolin pulled her along until they reached the monastery proper. Azure's soldiers advanced at his command, engaging palace guards here to secure a path toward the center. As they waited, Adolin stepped up to the edge of the plateau and surveyed the city. His home. It was falling. The nearest gate had been broken completely open, and parchment flooded through it toward the palace. Others had taken the walls via ladder crews, and those were pushing down into the city at other points, including near the palace gardens. That enormous stone monstrosity moved along the wall on the inside, reaching up and slapping at guard towers. A large group of people in varied costumes had surged down Talon Way, passing along one of the wind blades. The Cult of Moments? He couldn't be certain what part they'd played, but Parshmen were flooding the city in that direction as well. "We can fix this," Adolin thought. "We can bring our armies in, hold the palace hill, push back to the walls." They had dozens of shardbearers. They had Bridge Four and other surge binders. They could save this city. He just needed to get them here. Soon, Azure approached with a platoon of 30 men. "The pathway inward is secure, though a knot of the enemy still holds the very center. I've spared a few men to scour nearby buildings. It looks like the people you mentioned, the ones who were reveling last night, are slumbering inside. They don't move, even when we prod them." Adolin nodded, then led the way toward the center of the plateau, Shallan and Azure following. They passed battle lines of Azure's soldiers who were holding the streets. He soon saw the main force of the enemy collected on a path between monastery buildings, barring the way to the Oathgate's control building. Spurred by the urgency of Kolinar's predicament, Adolin took point and swept among the enemy, burning their eyes with his blade. He broke their line, though one straggler almost got in a lucky strike. Scar, fortunately, seemed to appear out of nowhere. The bridgeman caught the blow with his shield, then rammed a spear through the guardsman's chest.
"How many is that I owe you now?" Adolin asked.
"I wouldn't think to keep count, Bright Lord," Scar said with a grin, glowing light puffing from his lips.
Drahi joined them, and they chased the routed enemy past the King's Chapel, finally reaching the control building. Adolin had always known it as the Circle of Memories, merely another part of the monastery. As Shallan had warned, it was overgrown with a dark mass that pulsed and throbbed like a pitch-black heart. Dark veins spread from it like roots pulsating in time with the heart.
"Storms," Drahi whispered. "All right," Shallan said, walking forward. "Guard this area. I'll see what I can do."
84. The One You Can Save. The enemy makes another push toward Feverstone Keep. I wish we knew what it was that had them so interested in that area. Could they be intent on capturing Ral Elorim? From Drawer 19-2, Third Topaz. Kaladin charged up the broad stairs, followed by some 50 soldiers. Stormlight pulsed within him, lending a spring to each step. The fused had taken time to come attack him on the sunwalk, and it left soon after Shallan had created her ruse. He could only assume that the city assault was consuming the enemy's attention, which meant he might be able to use his powers without drawing immediate reprisal. Elokar led the way, brilliant shardblade carried in a two-handed grip. They twisted around at a landing and charged up another flight. Elokar didn't seem to care that each step took them farther from the bulk of their army.
"Up the stairs," he said softly to Syl. "Check for an ambush on each floor."
"Yes, sir, Commander, sir, Radiant, sir," she said, and zipped off. A moment later, she zipped back down. "Lots of men on the third floor, but they're backing away from the stairwell. Doesn't look like an ambush."
Kaladin nodded, then slowed Elokar with a touch on the arm. "We have a reception waiting," Kaladin said. He pointed at a squad of soldiers.
"It seems the King lost his guard somewhere. You're now them. If we get into combat, keep His Majesty from being surrounded."
He pointed at another group.
"You men are... Beard?"
"Yes, Cal,"
the Saki guardsman said. He hesitated, then saluted.
Sir?"
Behind him were Noro, Ved, Alaward, and Vasilev, Kaladin's entire squad from the wall guard. Noro shrugged.
"Without the captain, we don't have a proper platoon leader."
Figured we should stick with you.
Beard nodded and rubbed at the glyph ward wrapping his right arm. Fortune, it read.
Good to have you, Kaladin said. Try to keep me from being flanked, but give me space if you can.
Don't crowd you, Lieutenant Noro said, and don't let anyone else crowd you either.
Can do, sir.
Kaladin looked to the king and nodded. The two of them took the last few steps up to the landing to emerge into a broad stone hallway carpeted down the center but otherwise unornamented. Kaladin had expected the palace to be more lavish, but it appeared that even here, in the seat of their power, the Colins preferred buildings that felt like bunkers. Funny, after hearing them complain that their fortresses on the shattered plains lacked comfort. Syl was right. A platoon of enemy soldiers had formed up down the hall, holding halberds or crossbows, but seemed content to wait. Kaladin prepared Stormlight. He could paint the walls with a power that would cause crossbow bolts to veer aside in their flight, but it was far from a perfect art. It was the power he understood the least.
"Do you not see me?" Elikar bellowed. "Do you not know your monarch? Are you so far consumed by the touch of the Spren that you would kill your own king?"
Storms. Those soldiers barely seemed to be breathing. At first they didn't move, then a few looked backward down the hallway. Was that a distant voice? The palace soldiers immediately broke formation and retreated. Elikar set his jaw, then led the way after them. Each step made Kaladin more anxious. He didn't have the troops to properly hold their retreat. All he could do was post a pair of men at each intersection, with instructions to yell if they saw someone coming down the cross hallways. They passed a corridor lined with statues of the heralds. 9 of them at least. One was missing. Kaladin sent Syl ahead to watch, but that left him feeling even more exposed. Everyone but him seemed to know the way, which made sense, but it made him feel carried along on some sort of tide. They finally reached the royal chambers, marked by a broad set of doors, open and inviting. Kaladin stopped his men 30 feet from the opening, near a corridor that split off to the left. Even from here he could see that the chamber beyond the doors finally displayed some of the lavish ornamentation he had expected. Rich carpets, too much furniture, everything covered in embroidery or gilding.
"There are soldiers down that smaller hallway to the left," Syl said, zipping back to him. "There isn't a single one in the room ahead, but—" "Kaladin? She—"